The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, this is Daryl Banks, co-creator of Green Lantern Kyle Rayner, and you're listening to the PVD Cast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 254. I hope you're doing well out there as you're listening to this podcast. And by the way, thank you very much for checking it out. It's going to be a fun episode, one that has a little bit of a backstory to it. So if I may, I'd like to fill in the blanks, so to speak. Well, my guest for this episode is a gentleman by the name of Chris Stawley. Chris is an independent podcaster out in Pennsylvania, and I actually was on his show about a month ago, and his show is called Breaking the Fourth Wall. And how I got the opportunity to be on Breaking the Fourth Wall was because in August, I started working with Steve Joyner, who is a publicist out of San Diego. And he has given me the opportunity to interview a lot of cool people and do a lot of cool things. And as a side note, I can't even put into words how thankful I am for those opportunities. Steve's a heck of a great guy. I always enjoy working with him. And he was the one that suggested maybe I go on Chris's podcast. So during the night of the recording, I checked into the virtual conference room, if you will, a few minutes early. And so Chris was there. We started talking a little bit, and all of a sudden we realized that we're very much alike, as we're both independent podcasters and we both spent some time in the independent wrestling scene. And so it was just such a weird, like, just happenstance or coincidence. And I had a blast on Chris's podcast. And so I offered him the opportunity to come on the PVD Cast. So in this episode, you're going to hear all about Chris's podcasting career as well as his wrestling career. He wrestled not only in Philadelphia, but he also went out to Colorado and wrestled out there as well. So it's going to be a fun episode. I hope you enjoy it. But before we get into that conversation, I need to let you know real quickly about the great sponsor of the PVD Cast. I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have everything you need for your comic book fandom. I mean, they've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, comic book supplies, collectibles. I mean, hundreds on top of hundreds of back issues. So if you're missing that very rare issue of, say, I don't know, Superman or Batman or Wonder Woman or Spider-Man or the Avengers, stop on by the store and say hi to Jeff, and he might be able to help you get that one issue that has escaped you for so long. Because again, hundreds, if not thousands, of back issues. But I kind of got off track because I need to let you know where you can find World's Greatest Comics online, just in case you're not in the Central Ohio area. Well, you can find them online. Their website is wgcomics.com, and they're even on Facebook. Again, just look for at WG Comics, and you can get all the details right there about the store. And once again, if you happen to be in Central Ohio, stop on by. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know that you heard about the store from me right here on the PVD Cast. All right, folks, with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation with Chris Stawley. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sitting down tonight with a fellow podcaster, Mr. Chris Stawley. Chris, how you doing this evening?
I'm all right. How are you?
Oh, not too bad. I can't complain. Well, let's talk a little bit about your podcast, Breaking the Fourth Wall. So can you give the listeners a little description as to that podcast and what topics you talk about and whatnot?
Sure. Breaking the Fourth Wall is a two-part type podcast. One part is throughout the week, I'll do celebrity interviews, or actually interviews of any kind, where I'll sit down with anybody from a actor, director, author, internet influencer, podcaster, whatever, down to a sixth grade school teacher or just the person next door, because I believe everybody has a story to tell. And I think it's worth checking it out. And I've gotten some great conversations out of people you would never have expected to sit down and talk to. And then there's also the weekly show, which is a panel-esque show in the style of a morning terrestrial radio talk show, like a Preston and Steve or Howard Stern or Bob and Tom, for people that may need kind of visualization. In other words, we sit there and do segments to make fun of a lot of things. Like we'll do a segment called The News Buffet, where we go into the strange world of news beyond what you typically get from like CBS or CNN. Then we have What's Your Effing Deal, where we're looking into different aspects of entertainment, to our after hour segment, which is usually just generalized funny stuff. But once in a while, we'll dig into very in-depth conversations, such as the last one we did this last Tuesday, dealt a lot with male depression. So it would sometimes we'll get into those deep topics, but more often it's a lighthearted subject matter.
I'm just going to ask, I mean, because I feel like personally, mental health issues are not discussed enough in our society, and it's a shame, and it shouldn't be that way. So can I ask, how did you guys just get on that topic? Was it just something organically that happened, or did you have a little bit of preconceived idea? Or
it was a little bit of both. On the panel show, we sometimes have a guest on that'll be on just to join the ride and be insane and laugh at the silliness of us. This past week, we had Brian Snow from Snowman in the Morning podcast on. And the day before he came on the show with us, he went on Facebook Live expressing his own bouts of deep depressions. And he was reacting to, I believe, a news article where somebody blasted Dak Prescott for coming out about suffering from chronic depression. And, you know, basically man up, you make multi-million dollars, blah, 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 blah. And it struck a major chord with Brian that he went on Facebook Live and not only talked about this subject matter, but talked about his own battles with depression and how in society it really is something that is kind of taboo for men to really mm-hmm. express in general, because, you know, we're supposed to be the stoic rocks and everything else. And it struck my imagination enough that I literally hand over my after hour segment to Brian to discuss this issue further. Because, yeah, like you, I thoroughly agree that there's not much talked about on this. When people talk about depression, we're always talking about children or we're always talking about women. But men are always supposed to just shoulder it all and be quiet about it. And I don't know if it's a primal thing or, you know, a societal thing. I mean, I made arguments in the show about, like, I think it's because of the fact that we grow up around our buddies, and anytime you show any type of vulnerability to your buddies, 9 times out of 10, they make fun of it, usually in good humor, but it doesn't help the situation. Yeah, so it was kind of an organic conversation that was born from an outside stimulant.
All right, so we got a little bit off track right out of the gates, but, you know, my listeners know we're going to go all over the place. All right, so let's talk about breaking the fourth wall in details of, like, how long ago did you start the podcast?
4.5 years ago, going on 5 here soon.
So how did you get started in podcasting? Are you a radio guy that just transitioned over, or are you like me, DIY?
Now it's kind of a weird story. I used to be an apartment maintenance mechanic, and during the days that I would work in empty apartments, turning them over, getting them ready for new tenants, I would usually have something in the background just to have some background noise, something to keep the silence away while I'm working. And I wound up discovering podcasts through YouTube, okay. Usually like movie entertainment podcasts, stuff like that, like Collider Home Video or Jedi Council and Fat Man on Batman, you know, for example. And I'm sitting there listening to them as I'm doing my work, and I'm sitting there like, hell, I could do that. You know, so one day I got a fur up my ass, grabbed my cell phone, called a couple buddies, put them on speaker and set a digital recorder next to my cell phone. And Born was the first ever Breaking the Fourth Wall podcast. If you guys go look it up on YouTube, please wait until episode like 60 to start listening, because until then I was still trying to figure it out. It was pretty much do it yourself, but and a lot of trial and error. But it was literally born from listening to other podcasts and I don't know. It just kind of appealed to me.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, full disclosure, I was on your show a few weeks ago, and again, I had a blast. I really did appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk to you about it. And I think we kind of hit on this, that it's something where you have a voice and there's very little rules when it comes to podcasting, you know, whether that's right or wrong, there's very few rules and you kind of just can learn as you go, because I too have some really bad episodes. I'm like, oh my God, please don't listen to any of those. Those are terrible because I didn't know what I was doing, you know?
I still have them. every episode's a bad episode until you find something that works.
Yeah.
But I'm the worst one. I'm the worst one. I critique the hell out of myself. I can't listen to my own shows. If I listen to my own shows, I will find 20 billion things wrong with it. So,
and I'm the same way too. You just gotta let go at points. I could edit audio, and it's like, you know, you just gotta go, okay, you know what? It's as good as you can be. Maybe it's not as good as the last one you did, but you know, maybe there was something with the mic or whatever. You just go with what you got, because otherwise you'd never get an episode out.
Exactly. And I was the same way in wrestling. I mean, I couldn't watch replays of my matches. Like, you know, I judge my matches by crowd reaction when I was in the ring, like as long as the crowd was into it. And I knew that me and my opponent had a decent, you know, decent match, no blown spots or anything else. And that's where I would leave it. If I sat down and watched the matches afterwards, like the recordings or whatever else, I guarantee I'd find at least 12, 15 things. I'd be like, nah, I could have done that better. No, that sucked. You know, what was I thinking? You know, so it's always been that way. I can't watch or listen to anything I've done, because if I do, I'll be the worst critic out of everybody that could be a critic.
Well, you jumped ahead a little bit. I was going to say, you and I share a common bond in our love of pro wrestling and being involved in pro wrestling at the independent level. So let's just go with it. How did you get started in pro wrestling?
By complete accident. Back in the early 90s, I met up with a group of friends in high school that loved pro wrestling the way I did. And we decided to start our own little backyard federation together. You know, we all had our little gimmicks and, you know, cardboard belts. You know the deal. Oh, and one day back in like 96, yeah, I think it was, they had caught wind of a wrestling convention coming to town at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And they had gotten it in their brilliant minds to, let's make a demo tape of us doing the backyard shit and hand it out to all the promoters at the wrestling convention. You know, kind of like how musicians make a demo tape and hand them out to record companies. I was absolutely against doing this. I was like, no, I'm not doing that. Come on. You know, I was a musician at the time and everything. I did this for the fun of hanging out with my buddies. I never expected it to go anywhere or had ambitions for it to go anywhere. And it took my friend begging, pleading, and about a two 12 packs of Budweiser, Bud Ice to be exact, to turn around and finally get me to say, okay, yeah, I'll do the demo, and finally rationalize it to myself and the fact that I'm never going to meet these people. So if I'm the butt of the joke, who cares? So I went and we did the backyard match and everything. I remember the match itself. It was me and a friend of mine named Tony versus in a tag team match against two buddies of mine that went by Black Death and Undertaker ripoff gimmick. I can't even remember the name of the gimmick. That's how terrible it is. We did our match and that was the end of it. And I forgot about it till a couple weeks later. I got a letter in the mail by Grand Wrestling Alliance here in Philadelphia, and it stated that after watching our dark demo tape, they came to the three following conclusions. Number one, we had raw talent that could be developed for in-ring work. Number two, we had personalities that could fit in the current storylines, and number three, we're effing nuts. And we were invited to try out with Grand Wrestling Alliance. At the time, it was training under Alexei Tekhterov, aka Mr. Jim Proper. But later the reins of training got passed off to Gary Wolf and Anthony Cirelli of the Pitbulls, and they wound up becoming my trainers. And somehow, some way, I got dragged into pro wrestling, kicking and screaming.
how was the training? Because you know you hear stories of, you know, like the old school Vern Gagne, where you run 10 miles and you do 700 Hindus, and then you hear, you know, other stories of, you know, of some of the old timers who will just sit in a chair and tell you how to do it. And you know what I mean? So how was the training under the two trainers that you had?
And well, I early on, understand, I was 5'11" and 126 pounds soaking wet. So like, I never expected anything to come from this anyway, but I somehow, some way showcased a major ability to bump and a no fear mentality of taking spots and taking bumps. And that really aided and progressed my training because I became very much a tackle dummy for a very good long time. Everybody wanted to jump in the ring with me and teach me something just because of the fact that I was willing to take whatever it is they wanted to give to me. I didn't so much go through a whole lot of the 10-mile runs. I mean, there were hell weeks, I guess you could say, in training where they would do that and, you know, give you like 200 Hindu squats and run 2 miles and then get into the ring and do the drills and do the rope runs and everything before you even get into mock matches or you know, spot training or chain training and stuff like that. So, I mean, by the time you got to those points, you were already exhausted. And I was one of those idiots. I went 6 days a week. You know, I was constantly in the ring. If I wasn't in the ring, I was on the training mats outside the ring, practicing chain and rolls. And, you know, like I said, I may have been drag kicking and screaming into it, but I dedicated to it that I was always there, sore or not, beat up or not. I did training with bruised ribs. I took a bad Liger bomb and still trained every day. Those bumps sucked, by the way, just to let you know, but I still did them. And I think that's really what kind of built my reputation in wrestling is that, you know, this guy will take anything.
Can we take a trip down memory lane? And can you tell us a little bit about your first match?
My first ever match was against a guy named the Don, who was your typical gangster gimmick. You know, the suit, the button-up shirt with the ripped-off sleeves and the violin case and everything else. At the time, I was the extreme Matt Wild, and I was supposed to be as good of a good guy as you could be. I come out to the ring, and I actually get, you know, first time out there, I come out to the ring, I'm able to get the crowd chanting, "Where's my pizza?" and everything else. Like, I'm really building up against this poor guy. And the match was literally, Don comes out to the ring, sneaks up behind me, hits me with the goddamn violin case. I go down like a sack of potatoes, bell rings, he goes for the pin, 1, 2, 3, it's over. That was my glorious debut into the world of professional wrestling. Is the most time I spent in that match in the ring was making fun of the Don before he even came out to the ring.
But I bet you were completely jacked. Like, you were just, I bet you had to be, right? You were so excited. You were like, holy shit, this is the first time, you know, this is what I've been working towards, right?
I was nervous as shit. I was really nervous as shit. And quite honestly, I can't even think about the adrenaline of it, really, because of the adrenaline of it gets kind of overshadowed by the fact that "Where's my pizza" chant followed poor Don throughout his career. Somehow, some way, I made that stick. my little rump with him, which I didn't even get a wrestling spot out of it. I took a violin case in the back of the head, and yet somehow, some way, I made that follow his whole career. In fact, years later, he and I still laughed about it. But that unfortunately overshadowed any thoughts or feelings of the match itself. I mean, of course, I was thrilled because, like, that was my graduation. Like, yes, I'm in now. Now I build my career. But at the same time, it was like, it really wasn't until a couple matches later where I was starting to build my character, build my gimmick, and having longer than one spot matches. Like, of course, I spent the first 2 years of my career counting lights at the end of the day. You know, but where I would have like at least one or two shine spots and really have an ability to be more than just like the guys you used to see on Saturday morning, you know, WWF superstars. Mm-hmm. Undertaker versus unknown fan number one. You know, mm-hmm. At least I wasn't unknown fan number one anymore. I was actually starting to build the personality that would become my career, play that off with other people who obviously were better than me. In every aspect, more experienced, more time in the ring, had a better name, better personality, whatever the case may be. But that's where really I felt that like the memory of the gimmick started to take shape, as opposed to the first match. I remember. It's really bad because it was a terrible match. I remember a match in 99. Myself and a guy named Vlad the Impaler were tag teaming up against a team known as TV Generation. And that was Maverick and Frank Cody, Pennsylvania Wrestling Alliance. It was right after a bad hurricane. I don't remember the name of the hurricane, but TV Generation came out in the slickers and everything else and trying to act like they were organizing hurricane relief to everybody, you know, while Vlad and I, who weren't supposed to be a tag team anyway, it was because my actual tag team partner was injured that we put Vlad in second, you know, at last minute. It was supposed to be my first ever win. It was my first win ever. And the reason it's so amazing to me is because the match was so ungodly bad that not only did I spend another year jobbing, but a hat guy from ECW was in the crowd. And I will never forget this. It's actually on YouTube. That match where you hear hat guy turn around and yell, "This matches like this are why Bischoff got fired." It was a horrible match. That's when I learned the ride can't always be glamorous and successful, and even the best, because Maverick and Frank were great wrestlers and great personalities, and so was Vlad. You know, I fully attest that the screw up of that match was me. Yeah, I won't lie, it was me.
Well, can you describe a little bit of your character in professional wrestling? Because I don't think we've given that enough due here. So tell us a little bit about your character.
Well, when he was born in Pennsylvania wrestling, he hailed from Northeast Philadelphia. And the idea of it was that he was a suburban street kid. not too distant from my real life. He came from the suburbs of Philadelphia. But he believed himself to be a street kid, you know, your typical wannabe. He took that mentality into the ring, knowing that he was the smallest dog in the yard and everything. So he really had a no fear mentality. Like in my career, I had never tapped out in a match, you know, never submitted or anything else because of the fact or backed down from a challenge, because that just wasn't wild. He knew he was a small guy, and to be able to justify being in the ring is that I could take more punishment than you. That mentality also came into the fact that he was a young upstart, and with his tag team known as Youth Gone Wild, he wanted to be able to prove to everybody that it was time for the dinosaurs to move out of the way. It's time for me to be in the spotlight. That was his mentality, especially when he took the heel turn. So his mentality was always, I will prove that I deserve my spot, and if you don't get out of my way, I'm going to take it. That lasted from the extreme to just Matt Wild, even in Colorado, where he took on the mentality of no longer being just from Northeast Philly, but from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania in general. And out in the Midwest, I very much pushed on the fact that I was trained by ECW legends, the Pitbulls, and everything else, and I wanted to bring, you know, where Colorado wrestling had more of the traditional style professional wrestling, I wanted to bring the hardcore of the East Coast to the Midwestern areas. So it was that mentality all the way up until I lost a bet with my promoter of Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling, and that bet turned me face and gave me the moniker the East Coast Kid, where the mentality was always still the same. Was that I'll never back down from a fight, and I will always prove that I'm the best, or do my damnedest to prove it. But that's the East Coast Kid is where Matt Wild really started to develop his comedy personality, you know, with reincarnations of Youth Gone Wild, where we would try to sell everything, including the referee, you know, stealing the promoter's license plate and trying to hawk it to the fans, stuff like that, like pulling off sections like that. And then Wild ended his career as the independent icon, where he finally acknowledged that he reached the pinnacle of his career. And of course he still felt that, you know, he was the best at what he does, and that everybody should respect him, especially because he's a small guy who's held every belt in every division except the heavyweight, you know, in his career, and has ran successful factions and tag teams, and, you know, legendary tag teams like YGW. But when he retired, it was literally him doing what he started. It was kind of full circle. It was turned around. It's like, I fought for the spotlight when it was my turn, and I'm not going to be the guy that's holding the spotlight away from the next gen. And he bowed out gracefully, although he still attends that there's one more good fight left in him.
No.
There's not. There's not, but he'll tell you there is.
Chris, obviously you stated you're a fan. So growing up, who were some of your favorite wrestlers to watch?
Flying Brian Pillman, Rob Van Dam, Bret Hart, Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty, a lot of the high flyers. I've always been a fan of the tag teams and the high flyers. You know, even the Lucha Libres, Juventud Guerrero, Rey Mysterio Jr., Psicosis, you know, Strike Force, Rick Martel and Tito Santana.
Yeah.
You know, just, you know, all the guys that did more than just the big bootleg drops. You know, like, of course, I loved the Hulk Hogans and the Ultimate Warriors, but I always loved the mid-card guys. You know, the ones that seemed to show the most personality and have the most in-ring ability that really never got the spotlight that I believe they deserved at times. Some of them, obviously, like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Rey Mysterio finally did get the shine, but more often than not, you know, in the years I grew up in pro wrestling, they weren't the spotlight guys. They were the mid-carders.
Yeah. So throughout your years of being involved in pro wrestling, and I shared a story on your podcast about a WWE legend, Hacksaw Jim Duggan. Do you have any interesting stories? Do you have any interactions that you'd like to talk about with any big name stars?
Well, when I was training for Grand Wrestling Alliance, I had an interaction with George the Animal Steel. George Steel was supposed to wrestle on the show. I believe he was taking on Jim Proper, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, for people that don't know, George the Animal Steel, one of his major gimmicks was he would eat turnbuckles. He would eat the turnbuckle pads, the padding out of the turnbuckle. So the promoter, Izzy Avalos, had just bought all brand new turnbuckles for the ring, you know, and they were about $450 a pop. Like they weren't cheap. So when we set up the ring, we purposely left one turnbuckle pad to be one of the older ones. And that was the one that was supposed to be for Mr. Steel. And I remember I was the guy in charge of walking Jim or George around the ring and showing him which turnbuckle was the correct turnbuckle. Like, you know, there was a little piece of tape on it and everything else for him to mark it. And that was the end of it. Day of the show. You know, George is in the ring and he's pulling false eats in the corner, you know, different corners and stuff like that. And he get cut off by Jim, which where he wouldn't be able to do it and all that. And I'm doing security around the ring. And then all of a sudden he gets Jim knocked out, knocked away. And he goes to the turnbuckle, eat. And all I look and I realize the spot that they're in. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I'm sitting there trying to get George's attention without alerting the crowd. No, wrong. Turnbuckle. He turns around, rips open that $450 turnbuckle pad and tears into it, standing in the corner. And I've never seen a Puerto Rican turn whiter. Like, another interaction I remember is this one. This one's kind of a longer story, but years ago I had worked as a game advisor for a game store called Funko Land. In Northeast Philadelphia, long before I became a wrestler. And one day coming into the area, it was about the time when the PlayStation 1 came out. Guy came in and I went to go help him, and it was fucking Dancing Stevie Richards.
Oh.
And I was, of course, I was starstruck. I'm like, oh my God, it's Stevie Richards. You know, he's a huge gamer. And all. So I'm trying to help him out and everything. And I turned around and I asked him, like at the end of the transaction and all, I was like, dude, level with me, what's it take to get into pro wrestling and everything else? And Stevie just kind of looked at me, and he must have been having a bad day or something, but he looked me up and down. He's like, you'll never fucking make it, kid, don't waste my time, and walked away. And that was the last time I spoke to him up until I did a show for Pennsylvania Wrestling Alliance. And again, I wasn't necessarily wrestling yet. I was still kind of doing behind the scenes. I was guarding the ring entrance way. And he's running to the ring and he literally stops and looks at me as he's coming to the ring because he was booked on the show. He stops and looks at me and shakes my hand and says, I'm sorry. Right before he jumps in the ring. So he recognized me. He recognized me as the old fucking game advisor kid, you know, now sitting there and he knows that if I'm doing this, I'm training. He's like, and he apologized to me mid match, you know, for discouraging me. So I'll never forget that one either.
That's awesome. That is awesome for Stevie Richards to do that. That to apologize. That's great stuff.
It is. It is. And I've always had a lot of respect for Steve. You know, again, although he was tall, he was always the skinny guy, and he was always the gimmick mm-hmm. that like nobody really took too seriously, which was kind of by design. But also, like, I've always felt that Steve has had the talent to really carry the company, and kind of in an ass backwards way, BWO proved that.
Yes.
You know, so, you know, I highly respected Steve as a performer and an in-ring talent. To get that validation from Stevie was, even though I don't think he's ever seen one of my matches, was still, you know, kind of a highlight of the career. Like the guy who said you ain't going to be amount to shit to turn around and say, you know what, I was wrong. You're there.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Chris for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. It's the one-stop shop for all of your comic book related needs. They've got single issues, collections, graphic novels, toys, collectibles, posters, a gigantic catalog of back issues, and one world-class pull system. So if you don't want to miss out on a single issue of your favorite comic, sign up for the pull system, and every time it arrives, it's held for you right at the register. So check them out online. Just go over to wgcomics.com. You can find them on Facebook. Just search for @WGComics. Or better yet, if you're in the Central Ohio area, stop on by the store. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And let them know you heard about the store from yours truly right here on the PBD Cast. Well, do you have any crazy road stories that you feel that you can share? Because for those that are listening, wrestling and crazy road stories go hand in hand.
I could tell you about the time of partying in a hotel room with Honky Tonk Man, the Witch Queen Maeve, and a new up and coming worker who just graduated, had his first match that night. Can't remember his name, but we were all sitting there. We were getting pretty drunk, you know, just listening to Wayne tell his stories, you know, because honky talks a lot. And when he talks, you listen. Now, Queen Maeve, she's as gruff as they get, you know. She was one of those, like, the best way I can describe her, she was 6'4", and she looked like Alice Cooper with tits.
Okay.
Like, there's like no other way to describe her. And she was a very intense person, you know, and I was still kind of green, you know, there was still some green on the field for me, but I had a couple years in the business at this point. So like I was getting to that transition of no longer being the rookie, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm hanging out with them. We're all drinking. We're listening to Wayne, and then all of a sudden the new kid turns around. He's like, man, I'm so fucking thrilled. I'm a fucking wrestler. I did my match. The alcohol kicked in, and it started honky off. Oh, you're a wrestler, huh, kid? Let me see your gold medals. Let me see. You ain't no fucking wrestler. And it was like 35 minutes of him berating this poor kid, and Maeve and I are in the back just laughing our ass off because the more the kid tried to apologize, the more Wayne would go off on him. It was classic. Let's see. I did promise you one story, did I not?
I believe so.
If memory serves, I promised you the time the blind guy broke his own gimmick.
Correct. Yes.
That's a story. One time we were out in Colorado for Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling, and we were doing an outdoor show at a biker bar where we're out in the parking lot is where the ring is. And where their outdoor patio was set up to be our locker room. It was me at the time. I was doing Wicked Wild, Matt Wild, and I was tagged up with Ringmaster Romeo. And we were called Wicked Wild, and it was basically a Juggalo gimmick, you know, and stuff like that. And we were taking on Thunder and Lightning. What the hell were they called? Perfect Vision. They were called Perfect Vision. It was Lightning Blind Mike and his tag team partner, Rowdy Knight. they were the heels, we were the faces, and while we were waiting for our turn to go into the ring, Doink the Clown, one of the incarnations played by Outlaw Glennie Taylor, was running around with a water bottle and randomly spraying people's crotches. Well, right before we went out, he got Blind Mike. And Blind Mike's gimmick was neon green tights. So that water instantly put a water stain all down the front of him. So when we came out to the ring, we were laying into him mercilessly that he pissed himself. Like, we're doing it all through the match and everything. Well, as the match is going on, this thunderstorm comes rolling in. And I mean, it's crazy. And at the point, we get to the point of the match where it's thundering, it's thundering, it's thundering, but the match is still going on. I'm at the one turnbuckle, Rowdy Knight's at the other turnbuckle, waiting to be tagged in, and Romeo's in with Lightning Blind Mike. Mike's got Romeo in a reverse chin lock, so he's behind Romeo, and Romeo's screaming, "Get him off me, he pissed himself, it's all over my back, blah, 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 blah." And a lightning bolt struck not that far away with a loud blast. And simultaneously, Rowdy Knight and I from across the ring looked at each other and started instantly inching away from the turnbuckles because, you know, the corner posts are, you know, they're basically lightning rods. And as we're doing that, literally all action in the ring stopped. And while still in the reverse chin lock, both Mike and Romeo look over their left shoulders at where the lightning strike was, which is where the blind guy broke his own gimmick, because the blind guy turned to look for the lightning.
Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
By the end of the match, the rain started coming in, and you know, when we did the finisher, the face paint was starting to wash off and everything, but that was a close call, but it was the timing of it was perfect, as exactly as both of them were looking up their left shoulder, Rowdy and I are moving away from the corner posts.
If I can put you on the spot, do you have a favorite match or favorite angle you were involved in?
My all-time favorite, I guess you could say the favorite feud of all time was in Colorado for Rocky Mountain Championship Wrestling. I went through a year and a half blood feud with a guy named Shama Tango. Who's a really, really good friend of mine. Like, we were closest brothers. And to have this opportunity, at the time, he was the interregional champion, which was Rocky Mountain's intercontinental champion, basically. It was Wild's turn to try to get the belt, and I spent a year and a half chasing after this belt. I'd get into matches with him, and we did so many different matches. We did a Brazilian strap match, which was a play on kind of like the lumberjack, if you will, where we would be in the ring and we would fight each other. But if you got thrown out, there were wrestlers outside of the ring, but they were there with leather straps. And if you got thrown out, they whipped you until you got back into the ring. So we did matches like that. And the Colorado Crossfire, which was kind of a elimination tag match, 5-man elimination tag match. You know, and all, and we pulled so many different style gimmicks where he would fight, since he was a voodoo gimmick, he would fireball me in the face and I'd be out for a couple weeks because of being burned and, you know, stuff like that. And he was always cheating to keep that belt. And then I'd wear out my chances of being able to gain the title and have to rework my way up the ranks and do table matches or whatever else to increase my standings to get back to it. And all the while, like, he was constantly trying to screw me over and everything. It was a real fun time and story arc. And then finally it culminated in a match that was dubbed the Harvest of Destruction match. It was our Halloween match. And it was a Four Corners of Death hardcore match for Shama and I. There was, you know, basically there was no excuses from this point. And we pulled off what was considered the bloodiest match in Colorado history, to where I finally won the tag or the interregional title. Ironically, my celebration was the ring crew said they weren't cleaning it up, and Shama and I, with concussions and everything else, were out mopping up our own blood. But I guess what made it the most fun was that Shama and I, because we were such close friends, we didn't pull any punches. Like, from the beginning of the feud, you know, when the crowd would stare at, you know, cheer for us or whatever else, as we're staring each other down, it's like, you want to do it? Sure, throw it. And, you know, all of a sudden, Shama just cold cocks me. It's like, okay, I know how we want to play now. And basically, you know, kayfabe's dead. We pull punches, not in these matches. Like every hit was deliberate and every shot was real. And then we'd like the next day we'd wind up in a bar talking about it, you know, getting drunk and shit like that. That was a fun year and a half. I absolutely loved that feud. Even during the time that I was the interregional champion, he would constantly screw with my matches and everything else. And at the time I was supposed to be prepping up a guy named Rob Risen to precede me as the interregional champion. But it came to the second annual Harvest of Destruction match, which became a hardcore match, but it was a three-way dance between mm-hmm. Rob Risen, myself, and Shama Tango. Shama goes to screw Rob to the point that Rob's hurt, and I'm checking on him, and Shama steals the win by rolling me up because I was more concerned about Rob, and that was the end of my title reign. But that was just a fun story arc, a fun feud between Shama and I. I would have kept that one going if I could have. That was a great time.
Let's move back to podcasting for a minute because I just realized there was a couple of questions that I wanted to ask and we never got to it. So can you talk to us a little bit about Realm of the Mist Entertainment?
Again, like a lot of the things I do in entertainment, it usually comes by accident. Like I grew up always wanting to be, you know, Bon Jovi or Ozzy Osbourne. I wanted to be the musician. I wasn't interested in all these other things that I do. So when I discover them by accident. Realm of the Mist was originally designed in 2007 to protect the interests of the band I was in at the time called Disillusion Purity. You know, it was to protect the interests of the music and the artistry and everything else in the band. And when the band broke up, I still owned the rights to Realm of the Mist and never used it for anything up until I started podcasting. Now at the time I was only doing Breaking the Fourth Wall and I started taking on other podcasts like War of the Stars, a Star Wars podcast, who were wanting to learn how to do podcasts. And of course they were coming to the guy that was recording it with a digital recorder and a cell phone. So yeah, let me teach you how I do things. But as I started working with these other podcasts and helping them develop their podcasts, I decided that I needed to protect their interests and give them all a home under one umbrella company. And thus, I revamped Realm of the Mist Entertainment into a podcasting, for lack of a better term, a conglomerate for podcast networks. You know, intend to release content under the Realm of the Mist banner to protect their interests, even though it was still their individual shows and their individual intellectual properties. And that's basically what Realm of the Mist is. It's just an umbrella company to show support and family for each other through promotion, through editing, through anything that the podcast needs.
Cool. That's something that I think, you know, when I first started this, I never thought about until 3 years ago. Incorporating, you know, becoming an LLC so that you have some protections, you know, against people claiming you did them wrong or not getting tax write-offs or stuff like that. I'm a huge advocate of folks doing that.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Realm of the Mist in current incarnation is more like a production company than a network, as it were, because the only things Realm of the Mist is putting out right now besides rebroadcasting syndicated shows, as far as original content, is the Breaking the Fourth Wall series and Wild Hide Reviews and Reacts, which is me checking out trailers or music videos just because extra content to release. It's nothing really spectacular, you know, like, oh, cool, this trailer's fine. Yeah, I'm looking forward to the movie. Great reaction. But I mean, you know, what am I supposed to do, a backflip? You know, but I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, right now there's only Breaking the Fourth Wall. That doesn't mean in the future I won't take on future podcasts into the company that go under the umbrella. It just means right now Realm of the Mist is more acting as the editorial and promotional standpoint of Breaking the Fourth Wall. We are working on a Realm of the Mist daily show. That's a working title. We haven't come up with a proper name for it yet, but something that would be a daily podcast. So stay tuned. That's in development.
Well, what's some of the pros and cons of being a podcaster?
Well, like anything, the pro of it is you get to have fun talking about things you love talking about, whether you're having interviews with people you've never met before and, sitting down and just, you know, sharing conversations and stories and everything. That's always a plus. And like with the Breaking the Fourth Wall weekly show, where we just get to sit down and make each other laugh for a couple hours. That's absolutely priceless. The con of pro wrestling is, or yeah, pro wrestling, podcasting is just the time involved. Like, people think podcasting is simply you sit down in front of a mic, talk for whatever amount of time, and then you're done. If you're really doing podcasting the right way, there's promotion, there's editing, there's uploading, there's sharing, there's trying to get guests, and there's a lot of behind the scenes, off the camera stuff that a lot of people just do not know. That this hobby, and if it's a hobby for you, you know, it's a hobby for you, but this hobby could eat so much time in the day. Like, to give an example, there are times where I'm doing shows, and by the end of the show, you know, I do the show, they do the interview for a half an hour. You know, I'm not going to bed till like 2-3 o'clock in the morning because I've been sitting there editing, uploading, and prepping it for its release. And then the next morning when I wake up at 9 o'clock in the morning, the first thing I'm doing is sharing it out, promoting it, you know, getting it out, getting the links out to everywhere I can get it. And just so, yeah, there's a lot of time in it. Mm-hmm. And it's even worse when you're trying to do it for not only your show, but a lot of other shows as well.
Yeah, it's a labor of love. And you know what? I'll be honest, Chris, sometimes I have had to force myself to stop because it's, you know, 9:30 at night. I've been at it since I got home from work, you know, at 4:30. And it's like, no, you know what? You need to stop and just go relax, because you're just going to work yourself to the point where you're going to work till 11 and then you're going to go to bed and then you're not going to be able to sleep. And you know what I mean? Like, sometimes that happens to me. I have to grind, you know, basically grind, put myself on punishment, so to speak, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, there's a lot of times our mutual publicist, Steve Joyner, he probably thinks I'm tired of talking to him, you know, because there's many a times I'm in the middle of like editing, producing or whatever else, like not necessarily on air, you know, recording, but doing all the behind the scenes shit. And he'll call my phone and it's just like, yes, Steve, you know, and it's because of the fact I'm so entranced in what I'm doing, and here he is like, hey, I got somebody I want you to talk to. It's like, well, shit, hold on, let me pull it up and stop what I'm doing here.
Yeah. Well, before we get to social media, website, and all that stuff, it's time to play a game, Chris. I like to play a game with folks all who have spent some time in the wrestling biz. It's called Tag Feud or Job. So I'm going to explain to the listeners, for those that are unfamiliar, how this game works. I have picked three individuals, three wrestlers, and I'm going to name those wrestlers, and Chris is going to pick the person that he would want to tag with for a while, a person that he would want to feud with for a while, and the person that he would want to do the job to for a while. Now, these wrestlers will be in their prime if they happen to be past their prime, or if they, heaven forbid, are not even with us, they will be in their prime. So, are you ready, Chris?
I'm ready. Let's do it. Marry, kill, and fuck. Got it.
Basically what it is. Yes. Breaking kayfabe. That's basically what it is.
There you go.
All right. The first possible individual, since you love wrestling, you love podcasting, so does this man, Colt Cabana. Second choice. You mentioned him as one of your favorites. The best there was, the best there ever will be, the Hitman, Bret Hart. And then this one, I kind of changed. I had somebody else down, but I thought when you mentioned how much, when you first started training, how much people wanted to work with you because you would take a lot of bumps and whatnot. In my mind, there's one wrestler that I remember being an absolute bump machine before that was even a thing. He was one third of the Fabulous Freebirds, Buddy Roberts. So who would you want to feud with? Who would you want to tag with? Who would you want to do the job to?
Well, I mean, like right off the bat, you would think I would want to, you know, do the job to Bret the Hitman Hart, but I think I would rather feud him. Like a lot of people would probably think, oh, you want to tag with Bret Hart. He's one of your idols. You're absolutely right. But I think it would be more fun to feud against him and just get a chance to see if I could stack up to the excellence of execution. So I'll put him in feud. I think Colt Cabana I'll put into job. You know, I'll do the job for Colt. I know his career. I know his wrestling. But the reason I'm putting him in job is because, come on, man, who wouldn't want to be a free bird for a while? Of course, I'm going to tag with Rogers.
That's right, man. The greatest six-man tag team ever, in my humble opinion, is the Fabulous Freebirds, hands down, no debating.
Absolutely. If I get to hold the moniker of being one of the Freebirds, I'm tagging with Rogers.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Chris, we're almost out of time, so let's let everybody know where they can keep tabs on you, social media, website, all that fun stuff.
Well, if you enjoy Realm of the Mist Entertainment and all its subsequent podcasts, just check us out on YouTube. Look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment. Like, share, comment, subscribe. If you enjoy the Realm of the Mist Entertainment on audio-only format, you can find Realm of the Mist Entertainment on Anchor.fm, Apple, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, or wherever quality podcasts can be heard. You could also look up Realm of the Mist Entertainment on all the social medias, you know, Twitter, Instagram, I knew it began with an I, Facebook, and all the other subsequent ones. You can probably find us on the ones you don't even, you can find our MySpace page if you really look hard enough.
I have a question. Ahead, but, did you have a WWE tout?
Yes.
Do you remember that?
No, I did not, but I had a wrestling buddy. I had a Hulk Hogan wrestling buddy.
Carry on with you your plug, those, right? Sorry.
The pillow wrestlers.
Oh, I remember them. Oh, yeah.
It was last week. But and of course, guys, you know, if you want to talk to me directly, you can email me at realmofthemistentertainment@gmail.com. That's realmofthemistentertainment@gmail.com.
Chris, it was really fun having you on, man. Thank you for having me on a few weeks ago on Breaking the Fourth Wall. I appreciate it. And hopefully everybody checks out all the great stuff you got going on, and we'll have to do this again sometime.
Absolutely. I'll have to have you on the weekly show so you can join the insanity on that.
Okay. You got it.
We can put you through the paces. You can sit through a news buffet, see if you can handle it.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to quick break, and on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, my conversation with Chris Stolle, the man behind the Breaking the Fourth Wall podcast. And hey, definitely check out some episodes, because as I said before, I was on that podcast a few weeks ago and I had a blast, and Chris is a great host and I appreciate him having me on, and I'm glad he came on the PVD cast as well. So at this time, I think I need to let you know where you can get in touch with me if you choose to do so. You can find me on Twitter. My personal Twitter handle is @PVDMVP. You can shoot me an email if you'd like. JohnOrlando@PVDcast.com is the email address. You can leave me a message over on the Facebook page and the Instagram feed of this podcast. Just look for @PVDcast. And if you need to let people know where they can get their hands or ears, if you will, on this podcast, well, there's a bunch of different places. Obviously, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly, which is probably the best place to hear it, but it's also available through all of those major podcasting platforms, such as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, iHeartRadio, basically any major platform. Just go to their search engine, type in pvdcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it, PVDcast John Orlando, and you're sure to find it. And don't forget, if you listen to an episode, please rate, please review. That helps me out on the algorithm. And also subscribe so you never miss a single episode. And you know what? I'm going to add a fourth thing there that I'd like you to do for me if you can. That is tell some folks about the PVDcast, because word of mouth is a great form of advertising, and I would greatly appreciate it. So with that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. Thank you for listening, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. And as always, stay righteous, stay independent, stay safe and healthy. following has been a production of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC. Copyright 2020.